The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So here we are, Sunday morning at IMC, and it's the time, the usual time for a Dharma talk. And I would like to talk a little bit today about perspective. And the reason for this talk is that our world has changed. And that one perspective is that this is a remarkable event that's happening with the COVID-19 virus, that for a great extent, this is a shared experience of the globe. That what began in one small corner of the world has now become the experience of millions, billions of people. And it's quite something to have the perspective of a scale of what our shared human experience is like now. And that, you know, just like perhaps you who are listening today, so have millions, billions of people been trying to keep up a little bit, learn a little bit the basic ideas of the virus and how to be careful. And so that's a perspective that is shared. But there's many, many different perspectives that people have with what's happening. Some of the perspectives are useful, some of them are not. Some of them are helpful and some are unhelpful. Some are accurate and maybe not the most useful ones. Some are accurate and maybe more useful. There are different accurate perspectives to be had, but are they useful? So, for example, what I talked about last week is that we could have the perspective of I have to protect myself, that there's a danger out there, and I have to make myself somehow safe and secluded so that I don't get sick. So that's an accurate perspective. It's not inaccurate to have that perspective. But is that the most helpful perspective to have? What about the perspective that's the reverse of that, in a sense? That the perspective that everyone's in danger now, and we don't know, you know, the range of danger of any individual. It's going to vary, but certainly, quite dangerous, this virus, for some people. And so the perspective is, how can I protect others? How can I live a life that doesn't transmit or pass on the illness to others so that I don't be the carrier of it, even if I don't have it? And so the behavior in both perspectives might be exactly the same. You might wash your hands, you might stay home, you might do all kinds of things that to protect yourself, that would be the same behavior as protecting others. But the perspective for each behavior is very different. And my suggestion is that one of those perspectives is helpful and one of them is not. And it's not my job to say which one is helpful or not helpful for any individual. There's so many circumstances, so many personal situations that people are in that tips the scales one way or the other. But it is possible to consider which of these is most helpful, which is useful, which of them helps us to grow, which helps us to be freer, which helps bring out the best in us, and which perspective does the opposite, which perspective somehow closes us down, brings out maybe what's worst in us, maybe narrows the heart, brings us closer into the place where we get attached and cling to things and get caught up in our identities and concerns. Where do we most, where do we most live? Which of these perspectives is useful for us and helpful for us? And then there's all kinds of perspectives that we have now to kind of look around in our society to see what's going on. And, one of the things that's becoming, in my local community here and in the San Francisco Bay Area, is it's quite a big change to go in the supermarkets, which I did yesterday, and see the empty shelves. Not as dramatic as in some places. It was quite dramatic to see the lack of traffic on the roads, and the ease of traveling, the quietness of the neighborhoods. But it's also quite dramatic to be aware and can maintain the perspective that a lot of people are suffering in this new era, new time. There are people who are losing their work. The people who are in some ways the most vulnerable and probably can least afford it, people have hourly jobs in the service industry or in retail. And they customers are not coming, and so sales are not being done, and they're losing their jobs. Or the restaurants are being closed, or bars are being closed, and all kinds of things. And sometimes the hourly workers who can least afford losing their jobs or not getting paid are the very ones who may, some of them have children in the local schools. And schools, you know, especially for young kids, function a little bit as daycare, so they can work. And now all the local schools have closed. And so what do we do now? And if you still can go to work, but your kids, young kids are at home, can you really go to work anymore? What do you figure out? What do you do? And then a lot of local kids in local schools, my son is in high school here, there's a large percentage of those kids in the high school who receive free lunches, free breakfasts at school because there's not enough food at home, or they're homeless and this is their chance for a meal. And the school is trying to keep up with them and continue to offer meals for them, but there's the question of how to get it to them. Do they come to school to get it? How do they get to school? And so one perspective is to really understand the ripple effect that this has on our society and the people who are challenged, the people who are vulnerable. And can we protect ourselves at the same time as caring for those people? Can we make donations to people who are trying to bring food to the vulnerable, the soup kitchens, for example, and other places? Can we offer food to neighbors and people who are sick? Can we offer to go shopping? Yesterday I went shopping for people who are quite vulnerable for their health, immune compromised, and really they shouldn't be going into supermarkets or out into public. So these are some perspectives we can have. Other perspectives, I want to say a few more words about perspectives about this current condition that are kind of just maybe things that you've read already and kind of for circulating around. And then I want to switch to offer a Buddhist perspective on this, and something that's maybe kind of radical perspective that Buddhism offers, always, but certainly can be applied to this new world that we're living in. Another perspective about, you know, just what's happening now is that for some people, it's also, or in some societies, some communities, it's also an opportunity to live differently. That it's an opportunity to do the things that maybe you've been putting off for a long time. Rather than being out in the world and doing the ordinary activities that maybe keep you busy, some people are not working or working from home or whatever the reason it might be, that there's more time now. And what can you do with that time? Well, for Buddhist practitioners, this is like a, you know, golden opportunity to do one's practice. There's maybe more time now to meditate, to read Dharma books, to study, maybe to have phone calls with Dharma friends and have Dharma discussions. There's a very important expression in Buddhism called seclusion. And one of the ways that in the ancient texts of the Buddha, they talk about someone going off to meditate, they talked about going off into seclusion. There were no meditation centers in times of the Buddha. It wasn't like you could go and, you know, go online and find out what time meditation started and show up. People were mostly left to their own, and certainly sometimes monastic communities meditated together. But a lot of it was just you go into the woods or under a tree and go to an empty building, and you would meditate. And that was called seclusion. And the idea of meditating in seclusion actually has a long tradition in Buddhism. When I first did it, the first time I did it, I did years of meditating in the Zen tradition. And I meditated together with communities of people. In Zen, there's a very strong ethos, idea, that you practice together with people. That when everyone meditates in the monastery, you meditate. You don't go to meditate in this meditation hall when other people are not there. You meditate, you know, you really do the practice together with other people. And so when you sit to meditate, for example, or do the monastic practice, you have a lot of support. There's a lot of momentum in the people around you doing it. And then when I went to practice Vipassana in Thailand, I showed up at the little monastery outside of Bangkok. And I was told the abbot I was here to practice. And he gave me a little kuti, a little one-room hut at the edge of the monastery, edge of the rice fields. Literally, the kuti, the cabin, was built on stilts above a little swamp. And I was supposed to practice there alone in this little 8x8, 10x10 little cabin, one-room space. And I realized I had never done any retreats ever alone. And the first thing that I realized in doing that was I had to awaken inside of me a level of discipline that I didn't have to do when I always was meditating on retreat with people around me. So here, now that some of us are secluded much more and spending more time at home, this is a time maybe to figure out how and to have the discipline to meditate more, engage more in the Dharma practice. It doesn't have to be dramatically more, but maybe it's more than you have been. There's all kinds of other things that we can pick up and do during this time, perhaps. Reach out to people you haven't reached out to for a long time. You know, there's a long lost art of writing letters to people. Maybe this is a time to write letters to people you've been too busy to contact and meet with, or maybe it's an email. But there's all kinds of opportunities now. It's another perspective. This is a time of opportunity. And maybe it's an opportunity for our society as a whole. The longer this virus changes the nature of our society, the more opportunity we have to find new ways of being together, new ways of connecting, new ways of... And I hope it isn't just watching a lot of Netflix, a lot of movies on TV or on the computer. That if that's all it is, then it's a lost opportunity. But from the point of view, the perspective of Dharma practice and the Dharma, we're always kind of considering, wondering, thinking about what can we do? How can we live our life that benefits our own life in a real, deep way, serious way? How can we benefit the life of others, and how we can benefit the life of the whole world? That would be the Dharma perspective of all this that we have. So it's a time for perspectives that are compassionate in nature. It's a time for perspective that takes in the wider world and what's happening there and how we fit into that. It's a time for perspectives of figuring out a new way of being, that what is wise, what is useful, what is compassionate way at this particular time. I'm a little bit hoping that as everything kind of slows down or even stops, traffic, at least in our area, traffic slows down, and I already have a sense that the air pollution is a lot better, much less here in the Bay Area from fewer cars. And there's all kinds of environmental ways and social ways that something really good is happening also with this whole machine of consumption and production and that we have going on, that's kind of out of control, that no one could have, it wasn't reasonable really to consider ways to actively, fully slow it down or change the direction in some way that was more healthy for ourselves and the planet and our society, that now it's happening for us. And so this is also an opportunity not to glorify this opportunity or to deny the challenges that people are having and the difficulties. But I have this dream that this is an opportunity for us to see what the world is like when there's less production, consumption, when we begin kind of shifting how we affect the environment, the natural world around us and all this. And it seems like a golden opportunity, and I'm very curious myself to see how things change for the environment in a better way And as environment changes, hopefully changes for a better way for everyone who's been negatively impacted by the environmental damages of our time. So then to say a few words about the kind of more radical teachings of Buddhism about perspective. And that is a perspective that the Buddha had about the world itself. And there is this perspective that, a little bit paraphrasing or restating how I read it from the suttas, that it's possible to understand that our world begins and ends every moment. The Buddha used the language that our world arises and ceases. And we could possible to understand the arising and cessation of the loka. Loka is a word that's usually translated as world. And one of the ways the Buddha uses this word, loka, and especially in the context of talking about it beginning and ending moment by moment, is he's talking about each person's experiential world, the world of our own experience, how we are present, sensing, feeling the world. And not so much the world out there, but how the senses perceive that world, how the inner life projects on that world, how the perspectives we bring to that world, the understanding of who we are, the psychophysical world of our own thoughts and feelings and emotions and impulses and motivations. That, and we say that in English sometimes. We say that so-and-so was in their own world, and meaning that they're kind of self-absorbed or caught up in their own inner world, as if that's a whole world in itself that, you know, doesn't include other people. And so it's not that it means being self-absorbed in the Buddhist language, but there's a way in which the Buddha used the word world for something that's really not quite subjective either, but somewhere in that interface between subjective and objective, where the two kind of meet and inform each other and connect, which has to do with the nature of experience itself. And the experiencing, how we experience, what we experience, that is actually partly, in a big part, a function of our sensory apparatus. The different senses that we have, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the taste, the tactile functions we have. And it's also as a big function of how we experience the world is what we construct in our own mind. The world of our projections or our understandings, and many of them which are not fantasies, but are, you know, shared by other people, but are still kind of a mental construction to make it work and be here. So, for example, right now I'm sitting in IMC's meditation hall, and it's, you know, we share that idea, and so being a meditation hall, most people who come in here will take off their shoes when they come in because it's carpeted. If we called this IMC's dance hall, I bet a lot of people would keep their shoes on. It wouldn't be, you know, there would be a different relationship to it. But right now, without being open to the public, what was formerly IMC's meditation hall is now IMC's studio. And here's where we do our studio production and record and film and maybe edit and do all these kinds of things that, you know, are part of the studio operation. And our relationship to the studio might be a little bit different than the relationship we have to the meditation hall. So this idea, whether it's a meditation hall or dance hall, or sometimes we've shown movies on Friday night here, a movie hall. Sometimes we've had music events here. It's been a music hall. Sometimes it's been, and now right now it's kind of like a little bit of a studio. Which of those is the real room? It's not, none of them, you know, are less or more real than the other. It's real by how we use it and how we project on it, the ideas, the constructs we have of what we call this room and then how we behave in it. And so this idea of how we construct our world is really deeply taught in Buddhist practice. And as we meditate, the mind gets quieter and deeper and stiller and more concentrated. It's the better perspective we have a vantage point from which to see the beginning of thoughts, the beginning of ideas, the beginning of how these concepts first arise in the mind. And in doing that, we have a fantastic ringside seat, bleacher seat, to really see how the mind constructs the world that we're in, how it constructs the how we interpret and understand the people we meet, sometimes with a lot of bias, how we understand ourselves and construct our own view, sometimes with a lot of bias. And there's all this kind of constructive activity of the mind that is part of the perceptual apparatus that is actually in constant flux. It's like a stream of psychophysical, mental and physical sensations and experiences that are constantly shifting and changing and in flux. And so, and if we really sit quietly and are really perceptive, then we'll start seeing that this is actually arising and passing moment by moment. There's a moment in which things come together, are there, they pass, they come together, they pass. And this arising and passing of a phenomenon, it's this moment-moment nature that maybe is unimaginable and not understandable without some deep meditation practice, is why the Buddha said that the world begins and ends moment by moment, and that it's possible to bring that world to stillness, to a kind of cessation, he called it, but to some kind of stillness and peacefulness where we're not obstructing it, we're not interfering with it, we're not oppressed by it, burdened by it. And the reason why we can bring this to a cessation temporarily is because it's all part of our psychophysical apparatus. And this doesn't have to be operating on automatic pilot, doesn't have to be racing along, going from one thought to the other, from one activity to the other, one emotion to another. It's possible to sit and practice and calm this down, settle this down, still this in a certain way, so that in the stillness we see, wow, in a certain way, things are always starting new, starting fresh. On a kind of large scale, sometimes people who meditate will feel this just in the course of a whole meditation, that the calmness, the subtleness, the clarity that might arise through meditation changes how we so radically how we see the external world or see ourselves, that it's almost like occasionally it feels like a new world has been born after we meditate or while we're meditating. Or kind of feel like, well, now it's a whole new game, a whole new perspective on what's going on. That things are a lot different. I mean, a little kind of small example of this in my own life is, I haven't done this for a while now, but there was a time when I would start feeling like I had too many things to do, and I felt like I was in a hurry and not enough time. And what I would do, when I felt like I didn't have enough time for all the things I needed to do, is I would stop from doing them and go meditate for about 15 minutes. And that 15 minutes was enough that when I finished meditating, I had a kind of experiential shift, a kind of attitude shift inside of me, that it actually felt like now I had lots of time. And it seemed like there was more spacious, and I could kind of do things in a more spacious and engaged way. And did I make more time? What shifted in that? And one of the things that shifted is that our concept of time and how much time there is and all that, that's also part of this world that we construct with the mental constructions, ideas that we have. And our sense of time can actually shift and change when we sit and meditate. Another thing that can change, that the world that changes, or a new world we step into after we've calmed down a bit in meditation, is that we might have a lot more wisdom. One of the kind of truisms of Buddhism is that if you want to be wise, calm yourself down. if you want to have access to your wisdom, see if you can cultivate more tranquility. So that's maybe not such an obvious thing that that's the direction to go. It might be to be wise, you're supposed to think more. To be wise, you have to read books or talk to people or somehow acquire knowledge or something. But by becoming calm and tranquil, then the obstructions to wisdom settle down. The ways in which the mind jumps around, spins around, gets caught on the merry-go-round of anxiety or resentment or regrets or whatever it might be that kind of fill the mental space so that our deeper inner capacity for reflection, for intuition, for wise understanding isn't really there, doesn't have a chance to surface. So now at this time of COVID-19, this is a time for a lot of wisdom. And so one of the things that we Buddhists maybe can do is spend a little bit more time meditating so we have access to our wisdom. So that we don't, it's reasonable that we're anxious. It's reasonable that there's a lot of reasons to have some fear and concern and worry of what's going on now. But the perspective I hope that we have is not to let the worry or anxiety have the upper hand, for it not to be pulling us around by the nose or not be the glasses through which we see the world around us, but to be respectful of whatever worry or anxiety we have, not to condemn it or feel wrong for having it, but to become quiet enough or tranquil enough, calm enough, that we have the glasses of wisdom, that we have the perspective of the ability to reflect, or some deeper intuition that is maybe more valuable for us than the voice of anxiety that might be there. So the idea of the new world that we enter into after meditation is maybe more accessible than this deeper kind of way that every moment the world gets born and then ceases. But for me, this is actually a very important idea. And one of the ways that I understand this is that in a certain way, that every moment we create the world for ourselves. We create the world in which we are living. And not, not the wider world, of course, but the immediate contact with that wider world, that meeting place between the subjective and objective world, the way we experience and construct our world, the way we see the world we're in, and that is something we're constantly constructing, constantly. And if we don't think about it or don't reflect on it or somehow work wisely with it, these minds that we have will often just kind of race along in the habits of our mind that we have, or the dispositions, the conditioning that's already in place, so that we're kind of racing along with ways that are not so wise. But part of Buddhist practice is to begin taking some care and responsibility for what world we live in, meaning for what is this thoughts, perspectives, what are the orientations, what is the understanding we have that constructs our world, our personal world that we live with and are sharing with others who come into it. And if that world ends and begins every moment, if it arises and passes and arises and passes, there's kind of this idea that there's a certain way in which everything is always fresh, everything new, that we're not required to bring with us what happened in the past, hold on to it, be stuck in it, be defined by the past. We can actually meet this next moment in with enough new possibilities that we actually are contributing to create the world that we want to live in. If we are condemning the world or complaining about the world out there, that it should be different, then or retreating from it completely and protecting ourselves, in some physical way, that is, that's one way to live. But from a Buddhist practice point of view, the idea is to be constantly finding ways to contribute, to think about, how do I create my world? How do I contribute to creating a better world? And we don't do this in isolation. It isn't just me, myself, and mine. But how is it for the whole world, the world around us? How can we create our world so it's a world that maybe improves the lives of others and makes it a better world? That we are, in a sense, the producers, the creators, or the shape, maybe shaper is a good word. We shape the world we live in. And so rather than complaining about it, make the world you want to live in. If the world is not a generous enough place, be generous. If the world is not a kind enough place, be kind. If the world doesn't feel like a friendly enough place, you be friendly. If the world doesn't feel like a compassionate enough place, you be compassionate. You don't have to do it in dramatic ways. You don't have to kind of like now become some saint or something. But you can, but to what degree do you, but if you remember that you actually you're creating your world and the world is not to your liking, what can you do to shift that, to change it? How do you, what do you bring? What perspective? What orientation? What aspirations? What motivations and sense of purpose can you bring to it? And one of the advantages of meditation is that if you're regular meditation, it can teach us, it can show us, it can shape us and develop us so that we have the ability to let go enough of the past, let go enough of the momentum of attachments, preoccupations, and thoughts, so that we can have more choice, have more ability to say, yes, I'd like to live in a different world. I'd like to live in a world where there is generosity, kindness, patience, love, wisdom, equanimity, where there's a world of caring for each other. So this idea of the world begins and ends moment by moment, and the experience of actually having that, both ideas, both as an idea, as an experience, can be seen as a powerful gift, a powerful kind of handing us the framework to understand that we can make the world a better place, that we can contribute. And so, you know, again, you don't, that doesn't mean that you're going to improve things in other countries and or even things in your wider neighborhood you can't see. But maybe you contribute to it in some degree. You contribute to this new world that's maybe coming to shape with the COVID-19. As I said earlier, I see this as a golden opportunity to start shifting things around for how we live and what we do and to really think about how we can do it to make this world a better place for everyone. A change that begins with ourselves. The world begins and ends, ends and begins here in you, nowhere else. That would be the Dharma perspective. And we don't deny other perspectives, they're accurate as well, but the Dharma perspective really is an empowering one or engaging one. Or, you know, this is the world that begins and ends. And how are you going to shape it? How are you going to contribute to it? What are your intentions for this? And, you know, at the end of that last meditation we just did, I asked you to consider if there's ways in which, what ways would you like to bring kind attention, generous attention, respectful attention out into the world that you're going to live in. And it, you know, it was not a coincidence that I had that question at the end of the meditation, because I believe that a session of meditation, more often than not, more than many other activities we do, will soften, relax, settle enough of us that we have access to deeper wellsprings or deeper places inside we tap into deeper places of intentionality or meaning or value or something that's deep inside of ourselves that's important for us. And where are these kind of the values we want to live by, the world that we want to create, is better accessed. So for those of you who meditate, maybe that's a question you could ask at the end of every sitting. Maybe at the end of every sitting, you can reflect on, what world do I want to create today? Yesterday's world is gone. Gone. Completely gone. Today's world is to be made, is to be created, is to somehow discover what it is. What is it to discover a new world? What is it to receive a new world? What is it to contribute to a new world? What is it to have a perspective? What perspective do you want to have if you start your life over moment by moment, day by day? So, thank you for listening. And if this works as a medium to give Dharma talks and do teachings, and then I'm hoping that we can now, during this period of COVID-19, that we can do more of this at IMC. And we would like to hear to support the people who are in seclusion, who are staying home, or feel, especially the people who feel isolated in this kind of environment. It's not an easy time for many people, or for whom it's nice to be connected to a Buddhist community. And so I hope that this is a medium that works, and if we get a sense that it does, we'll try to do more of this. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to try to do California time at 7 a.m., as every morning of the week this week, a sitting and a short, we call it a dharmet. And if you stay tuned to IMC's website, the news there, and also the calendar, you might see that over the next weeks that we will be able to offer more creative things that are helpful in this kind of format and other formats. So thank you for listening, and I wish you well, and I hope your world becomes a great world, and I hope that our worlds intersect, and that intersection just improves it for all of us. Thank you.